Okay, dear friends, it's so lovely to see, as I always say, not all of you, but each of you. That's a whole different thing. This evening, I would like to continue our work on one of the keynotes of Rabbi Elazar Kalir, Eko Omer. Let me offer briefly just a word of introduction for the sake of those who are joining us this week and were not here last week. The whole enterprise of the kinos, the dirges that we recite on Tisha B'Av, grows as a patch in the garden of Piyut. Piyut is, as I told you last week for your Jeopardy question, Piyut is poetry written specifically for the purpose of liturgy. It is poetry written to be prayed. And so it has its genesis is totally Bikdusha. Now, our writer of this evening is Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. And he is, in the literature, now it's more fashionable to call him Kaliri, because it's not, there's a debate among scholars exactly what his name means and how he gets it. But we do know more about him than we knew even 30 years ago. It's funny to think that we figured this all out while I was hanging around here in the RJC. Somebody in the world was figuring out when Rabbi Elazar HaKalir actually lived. I'm glad someone was using their time well. You know what I'm saying? So we now can more or less pinpoint his life as being at the end of the 6th, beginning of the 7th century. Now that is important because he was on the stage during periods of great ferment, during periods when the fortunes of the Jews were very high and during periods when they plummeted. So for example, he was already active in the Byzantine period in the land of Israel, which went as far as under Julian the Apostate. You see, it was not always clear that the Eastern Roman Empire was going to stay Christian. It was Christian for a few generations after Constantine. And then there came this Emperor Julian. And he said, you know what? I think we should all become Bali Tshuva. Let's go back to the old religion. Because this new one, for whatever reason, he wasn't enjoying. So when Julian the Apostate decided that the empire would go non-Christian, this was great for the minorities. And there was even a discussion under Julian that he told them maybe they could rebuild the third Beis HaMikdash. So you can just imagine what it was like to go from that to the extreme of the Emperor Justinian, during whose period the land of Israel, first of all, for the first time, had a Christian majority, and they were quite frisky, and the laws were turned very much against the Jewish people. And so even though at this point, almost 500 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the sense of being wrenched away from the land of Israel again became acute because of the taxes. Jews couldn't even continue to live on their own land. Now, my theory is, and it, you know, I'm really a I'm a novice and probably just a dilettante in this field, but my theory is that the real use of experiences of suffering almost requires a delay in time. A delay in time and then some sense of close association. So that the puzzle about why everything we use to access Tisha B'Av, aside from the book of Eicha itself, the book of Lamentation, why all of it is on the other side of a chasm of 500 years, is probably, my guess, because in the times of the classical period of the Paitanim in the land of Israel, they were experiencing something which to them felt like Churban. To them felt like a catastrophic meltdown of everything that made their lives coherent. And as a result, they looked back to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and all of the literature that accompanied it. They look back to it as a kind of a lens, a cognate, a correlative, through which they could understand their own situation. And so, as I mentioned last week, what is remarkable about Rabbi Elazar HaKalir and most of his poetry is that he managed to figure this one out. If he really, now that we sort of know when he lived in the late 6th and early 7th century. How long ago is that? That's almost 1,400 years, right? 1,300 years. What? He was there when the Muslims came in, toward the end of his life. He was in the land of Israel, that is correct. So from let's say 630 or 650 until, let's say, 1990, he managed to elude the hunters and to remain this kind of shadow who could hardly be pinned down to a specific moment. And that is a function of the grandeur of his artistry that was written in a way that hardly dips into his own personal experience, hardly borrows of his time, but speaks in a language selected among the classics, both of the Tanakh and rabbinic literature, uses old paint to paint his pictures. And you know, that's what great forgers do, you know. They try to find materials contemporaneous with the time when what they're forging was painted, and they use those so that you think it was painted back then. Right? That's one of the ways you find sort of knockoff forgers. People are not that great at it. But before we begin, now I want to enter the text. But as I better stay on. Could I ask you a huge favor? Could you just find me a Chumash Bamidbar quickly?
Another wall.
Oh, I have it. Thank you. Sharp-eyed son. The kino that we are going to be working on this evening, Eko Omer Kores La'av Befetzach. Extremely difficult kino, but it is based, its foundation is on the word ko, right? And I thought we would begin, in a sense, at the end, begin because ko is also in Yona de Yoma, as it appears in Rashi at the beginning of next week's Parsha. So those of you who have been coming for years, the veterans who've been coming for Parshas HaShavua, I'm giving you just a little tiny micro Parshas HaShavua as a way of introducing the this particular kino. The last verse of the kino is going to refer to Ko as the signature word of the prophets of Israel. And when in the second line of the last verse, where it says, Becho Omar Asher Lechozim Natsar, right? Who uses the word Ko, designated, preserved, Lechozim, for his visionaries, for his prophets. Rashi says, in the beginning of Parshas Matos, right? Vaydaber Moshe el Roshe HaMatos Livnei Yisrael, God speaks to the head, Moses speaks to the heads of the tribes, and he says, "Ze hadavar asher tziva Hashem." This is the matter or the word which God has commanded. And Rashi there, in as part of his effort to identify what is unique about Moshe, he says, "Ze hadavar," in the second Rashi, "Moshe nisnabe beko omar Hashem kachatzos halayla." Moses uses the word ko, as for example, in a verse which we'll figure in our discussion a little bit later. V'hanevim nisnabnu b'ko, and the other prophets also use the word ko, ko amar Hashem. Mosav aleya Moshe shenisnabe b'loshon ze hadavar. But Moses went beyond them, and he also gave some of his prophecies with the language ze hadavar. This is the word which God has commanded. And the Mefarshim, which brought to light today in our Rashi seminar with the interns, the Maharal explains that when you talk about Zeh Hadavar, those are the moments when Moshe Rabbeinu reveals something which is beyond time, something which is going to be a mitzvah for all generations and all periods. And that is what is unique about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he speaks in the Lashon of Zeh Hadavar, is saying something which, no matter when you live, it will be eternally relevant. And when you think about Jewish history, for all the fact that it certainly ebbs and flows and responds and reacts and takes on various elements of each of the periods, what is remarkable is how much has remained constant. The fact that Moshe's Torah has remained a vital, living document in the midst of every permutation which we have experienced in history. But that's Moshe in the Zeh mode. What then is the Ko mode? Or sometimes known as the Peri-Ko mode. Just kidding. What is the Ko? Ko is the work of the Navi. Now, compared to Moshe, the Navi, the prophet, seems to be a minor leaguer. But it's not minor. It's rather something which is completely different. It is something the prophet is sent to each generation to explain their moment to them, to explain the reality of the world in which we live. So by definition, a nevuah, the word of a Navi, does not have that timeless character which a mitzvah has. It can't, because it is keyed in specifically to interpret the time. Now, this is going to be very important in our kino, because remember again, I'll go back to where I started. Kalir is 500 years after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. He is already half a millennium into the emptiness of a world without a Beis HaMikdash. And so, the notion of Ko, the notion of the voice of the prophet who can tell us where we are and when we can expect a change. I'm not sure if that's a favor, Edgar.
Is you don't want too much
it just too much noise? I don't want to deprive anyone of oxygen. Was anybody uncomfortable before? I think we were okay. We were okay. So just
make sure.
I'm old. As it is, nobody can hear me. And then even there, you know, just cut it off. Oh, it just did. Oh. When Edgar says it's going, it's gone. Thank you very much, Edgar. Thank you. So, yes?
Isn't the Eko also related to Echa?
Of course it is. I'm getting there. But the fact that Echa is turned into Eko is something which has roots in very important traditions. And some of that is that the language of Ko, if you turn to the end of your colored sheets, is, I think this is called Salmon.
Yes.
Yes? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. At $15.99 a pound, I could only afford one slice. Okay. So this is the source of what Irving is referring to, or one of the sources. Echa, this is the Yalkut Shimoni, which is, actually this is a Midrash Rabbah, but there are some questions, that there are defects in the text. Buber says this exists. That was for Professor Stern. I just threw that in. But it's the Echa means Ayeko. It is translated like that. Why? Shenemar, because this word Ko has a history. Shenemar la Avram Avinu Ko Yezaracha. So thus shall be your seed when he's taken outside and shown the sky and the stars before the Bris Ben Abesarim. Ayeko Shenemar la Moshe Ko Somar Leves Yisrael. And where is the Ko that was given to Moshe at the time of the giving of the Torah? And you will see each of these appears, but here we're going to see Reb Elezer HaKalir doing what he very often will do. He will take an idea that the Midrash suggests, right? This notion that Echa is related to where is the Ko. And he will take it and extend it, find other Kos to plug into the formula of Ayeko, where is the Ko? And he does something else. And here's part of what I promised you last week. The structures that give you access points. First of all, the entire kina works on the basis of Ayeko, two lines of that, and then Vehein Ata, and behold now. So you always know you're plugging into a kind of a boilerplate, and the boilerplate works like this. We refer to some instance in biblical literature where the word Ko is connected to something extremely positive. And we'll see the variety, the different shapes. It's almost a protean movement. How he uses various examples of this Ko, that's always going to be positive. Where is the Ko, the good stuff? And then, Hein Ata, as compared to our reality. So, you're always going to know, whatever's in those two lines, right? Even if you don't have hundreds of years of Mefarshim to get you through this, because it's really difficult. This is one of those, this is the kind of poetry where even if you looked at the Perushim, even if you looked at the translation, you go back and it's still hard to decode exactly what he's saying, so you actually are hearing the language. Yes?
So you explained in the Kina what the Eko is. Well, how does the what is he working on? How does the Yalkut Shimoni use the Eko?
Exactly the same. It's in Echa. Echa, the Yalkut says, means Eko.
So that he's using it straight. He's not giving it a...
Well, he's extending it.
Okay.
What he's done is the Yalkut has two examples. Avraham and Moshe. Each of those examples represents a point of Genesis, if you will, right? Abraham represents the beginning of the relationship of God with Israel as a family, and Moshe represents the beginning of the relationship of God with the people through the giving of Torah as a structured legal covenant, right? So the Yalkut talks about what happens. Whatever happened to, or implies, whatever happened to the great process inaugurated with Ko. Right? So we see the two parallel chains. Now there is a third Midrashic source which is connected and which he also will gather in. And that's the second Midrash that I quoted for you, cited in the Midrash Rabbah. Mehechon zochu Yisrael lebirkas kohanim. Here they said, where do the Jewish people merit birkas kohanim? Now, it should be noted, their brachas promised all over the Torah. The Beis Halevi, my son's ancestor, the Beis Halevi explains that Kosevarchu is considered to be the preeminent blessing, and that notion of preeminence will appear in the Kina. It is preeminent because it is the only blessing which is not contingent on our behavior, right? It's one where the Kohanim have the obligation to initiate and to simply drop this on us, right? Kosev Archos B'nai Yisrael is not linked to if they will behave themselves. It's a straight shot. Now, that's important because if that is also associated with Ko, because that begins with the words Kosev Archu, what is the origins of that? Rabbi Yehuda Omar me Avraham ko yezaracha ko sevarchu es b'nei Yisrael. It also has its origins in the same notion of the Abrahamic ko. Right? So there's a midrash where now we have these three points on a triangle. We now have Moshe and the giving of the Torah with a ko. We now have Abraham with the beginning of his covenant to Bris Ben Absarim with a ko, and now we have the Birkas Kohanim, ko Sevarchu, as the ultimate reliable blessing, also with ko. So you see, it's working a little bit like dominoes. We find this similar thing, and then we can trace, almost like running a needle through all of the ko's to create a brocade. See. Yes, Miriam?
But wasn't Abraham's dependent on the fact that he went when God said lech lecha? In other words, rather than just being...
Well, by that time he's done lecht.
Yeah.
This is actually is a response to his question. Yeah. Now, if you go into the text on each of these, some of the similarities will fall apart in your hand, especially the ones that Talir collects. And in their variety is part of what makes this so interesting. Because what we're going to try to isolate, and it is not at all easy, and I read the Rav's notes on this Kina, and even the Rav is all over the place in terms of trying to identify to make this coherent. But it may just
coherent.
Be... What?
Coherent.
Coherent. Oh. Oh, Jeffrey, you nailed me. Okay. Let the tape reflect that the speaker just fainted. Yes.
A is an interrogative participle. A fo, a ze.
Right.
I'm questioning which.
Right. Where is it? It's really here. No. It's a fo. Where is it when we need it? In other words, we live in a world which seems to have become co-deficient, if you will. It is the missing link that identifies the state of Churban that Kalir is identifying. And you'll see all the different, once you begin to list, now the variety becomes not a puzzle in the, you know, how come this poem doesn't fit together. The variety becomes an inventory of lost coherence, and coherence in many different forms. Good. The other element, I gave you one way in which to thread through all of this. The other element is going to be that at the end of each stanza, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir borrows something from the first 10 verses of the 74th Psalm. Now, here is where I really went crazy with my colors. Right? This is in the light blue. I have reproduced the psalm for you, artfully, if I must say so myself. And there is just, you don't even have to go to a class on Rebbe Elazar HaKalir. You could just go to a class on this sheet. You'd need a whole half hour just to understand what the heck is he thinking here. But I'll explain it to you simply. I have taken the phrases that will be used in the Kina, right? First, I just copied all 10 verses of the Psalm. Then, I took the pieces which he would borrow. I didn't want them to run together, because sometimes he'll borrow one phrase or one verse and then go to the next verse. That's why you have the green and the blue. Green and blue is to let you know that they are quoted separately. It's just a way of keeping them separate. Then, this is so cool. If you go to the bottom of the sheet, you will see the translations have also been color-coded, so that the first, Lama Elokim Zonachta LaNetzach, appears in green at the bottom. Why, O God, hast thou cast us off forever? Right? And unfortunately, I should have made the next, there are some mistakes, but the next one would be blue. Why doth thine anger smoke against the flock of thy pasture? So that's the next one. That's the blue of verse 1, so which is quoted in that way. Let's take a few of these and try to begin to build this inventory of lost coherence. Okay? We'll start with the first one, which we had begun a little bit last week, but there are interesting things to note about it. But as we go on, there really are terrific things. A ko omer kores le'av bifetzach. Where is the ko of one who spoke, who opened discourse? You see, petzach is a great word. The last word in that line, petzach, is, it may actually be a pun on te-tzach. Tzach means to utter. The mouth which uttered. The opening of discourse with Abraham. Where is the ko of that covenantal overture? I'm translating in funny ways. Bibris ben habisarim ko yela netzach. In the covenant between the pieces where he said ko yihyeh, he said ko yihyeh zarecho. He said, thus will your seed be. But he changes a little bit. Ko yihyeh lo netzach. Two reasons. First of all, it was supposed to be an eternal problem, an eternal promise, right? But it also helps that it now rhymes with the first line, Petzach and Netzach, right? It's hard to find things that rhyme with Zaracha.
Petzach is to break out into song, kind of.
What is?
To break out into song.
What is? Oh, yeah.
Yiftzachurino.
Yeah.
Yiftzachurino. Yeah.
Exactly. V'hein ata bol'u atzomai beretzach. And as I mentioned last week, and now they have swallowed my bones in murder, in violence. So as before, bris, covenant, is always about separating things and creating distinction. Swallowing up is about destruction by sort of engulfing and obliterating that sense of clear lines of covenant. And then, of course, Loma Elokim Zonachto Lonetzach. Using the word Lonetzach again, why is it, God, that you have forsaken us? Lonetzach, which seems forever. You see, now there was a tradition that went back to the Radak that this chapter of the Tehillim was composed for the experience of exile. So it's not just an accident that Kalir has discovered it. But you see, he's very excited about discovering this, because by discovering it, he's actually, and this is just parenthetically, in the world of Kinos, the notion of plagiarism did not exist. Because it was not at all unusual for people to take an old poem. In the world of Piyut, take an old poem, write new verses, change a few lines. There was no sense. Until Kalir, they weren't even signing them. Right? So the idea of taking from the Psalms and just borrowing phrases and embroidering them into a poem, it only made it better, because the assumption was people knew the Psalm by heart. And so this gave you a kind of a grounding. At the same time, the psalm helped you understand the kina. But the kina functions as a kind of an introduction or an elaboration, if you will, a sort of a perush on the psalm. There's a new dynamic being created.
Was it that said, good poets borrow, great poets steal?
Okay. Well, there's a famous story about the Yiddish translation of Hamlet. Yeah. Everyone knows this one.
Yeah,
I forget the translated and improved.
For best
Yeah, that's the one. Yes, yes. Can we get some? Do you have any extra sheets around?
So I think there are a number
for family.
Chair,
it's okay. We want
the fact that this poem was, I think, composed by Asaph, who was a lady who lived during times of Shlomo and David. Is he linking that to the Harbon and then bringing that together? Just coincidental.
I could sell it because, as a matter of fact. And you'll appreciate this, the Levim figure in this kina. So the fact, and it's a very unusual because most everyone else in the kina is a character. The Levim are a group. So if Asaph is, you know, the fact that this is Asaph's tilim, it may indeed, that's a great connection, Ezra. Thank you. Let's do the next one. I want to keep going because I really want to get through a few of these. I don't have a lot of time. And I'm sort of like this about stretching to a third week on one kina. A ko gash kiseh le'olah l'ratzosecho. Where is the ko of the one who brought forth like a lamb to an offering to find your grace? Now this is referring to the Akedah. But it's going to refer to the Akedah in such an interesting way. Remember also that we are always of a mind that we are grieving for the Beis HaMikdash. And so the fact that Avraham Avinu is portrayed this time, not in the first verse, but this time, Gash kiseh le'olah l'ratzosecho, he is portrayed as a Kohen going to the altar. So in a sense, all of the Kohanim who are now deactivated by the Churban, the whole process, and remember the tradition that the Akedah actually took place on the Har HaBayis, the notion that there is this layering of the generations, that in Abraham, you had the prototype of all of the Kohanim who would come later. And in each Kohen, you had the memory of Abraham and his sacrifice. And so each day, the Korban HaTomid takes on this echo of the Akedah. This is earned by virtue of the Akedah. This is, in a sense, Isaac's altar, which we have been keeping all these hundreds of years. So what has happened to all of that? Nilcho ad ko pitu be'edosecho. Now this is really interesting. Because, now I forgot to tell you, the third part, the gray is all the psukim, with all the kos. I lined up the kos for you. I just missed one ko on Yehoshua. I owe you one ko. But look at the top of the verse. Vayomer Avram el Ne'arav. And Abraham said to the lads who accompanied him. Who were the lads? Yishmael and Eliezer, according to the Midrash. He said, Shivu lochem po im hachamor. You stay here with the donkeys. Va'ani v'hanar nilcho ad ko. And the lad and I will go. Where will we be going? To a place that I cannot even articulate, a place called Ko. We will go to Ko, and then we will bow down, we will worship, and we will come back to you. What then is this Ko? This Ko is the unique destination of the whole spiritual journey of Israel. This is the place where we alone can go and where we have to tell our co-travelers in the human family, wait for us, because we have an appointment with a destiny. Not because you're not good, not that we don't love you, but this is an appointment with destiny that no one else can share. This belongs to Abraham and to his chosen children. So it means that you know, I still love the imagery that the city on the hill. Well, Ko is our place. And he says, the language of the piyut is amazing. He says, Pitu be'edosecho, for your sake, for your testimony, they in a certain way tricked their co-travelers. They seduced them. They said, they told them something to keep them back so that they could be alone with you. Once upon a time, our lives were so coherent that we could see that place at the top of the hill where God was waiting for us. And then look what happens. V'hein ato dokru kifelach rayosecho. And now these same ones have stabbed, have pierced. Pelach is like the husk of a fruit. What? Pelacharim. The husk. They've pierced us like a cantaloupe. Right? Yeshan apcha betzon marisecho. And your anger. And now again, borrowing the next phrase from the psalm that you have in the lovely blue section. And now they have, your anger is like smoke on the flock, on the sheep of your flock. Now understand, to borrow the notion of smoke, what is the whole idea of the Mizbeach? The whole idea of the altar is to create this rising pillar of smoke, which is a cord that binds the world of heaven and the world of earth. And you remember in Pirkei Avos, it speaks about the smoke of the Beis HaMikdash that always, right, that always went up. And here you're talking about smoke which has been trapped on the earth. There's no connection. The smoke is this smoke of God's anger. Is this time, it's just confusion. And so by using this notion of the loss of the smoke of the altar, the loss of, we go ad ko, and at the top of the mountain we go further because the smoke connects us to Shamayim. He says, and now the smoke is trapped here with us. We can't see anything. We can't see the top of the mountain. And we can't imagine a connection to heaven. So you begin to see the loss of coherent direction in our historical lives. The sense of just wandering and not even, we don't have a coat, we don't have any Navi to tell us how to proceed or when we can expect this to end. We're just caught. Right? Let's do the next one. Eko havtochas akudim nikudim b'mashuos. This one is one, there are wars over this one. Among the kind of people who fight about kinos. It's a very small, very, very small skirmishes. It's like the Austro-Sardinian War of 1859. I mean, how many people showed up for that? You know what I'm saying? But there are little wars. Why? Because the word, first of all, what is the reference here? The reference here is, of course, and you have the pasuk. I forgot. You're very lucky. The second in the gray back pasuk by, Did I forget? No, right. I think they're misnumbered. No, what happens? There should be the Lovan one. You know what happens? I printed the same one twice. There's another one in here. I'm sorry. I told you I'm really not good at these source sheets. Shmuel, can you help me? Well, I'll fix it for next week, Pleonetta. Okay. We'll do some other colors. The salmon definitely stays. Okay. So, but this is talking about Yaakov's employment crisis with Lavan, his father-in-law. Right? And he has a dream, and And he's promised, he's told that, you know, with the speckled and the spotted sheep, and they're leaping, and he's promised that everything will go well. By the way, it is also the point where he is told that he should return to the land of Israel. Not insignificant in this context. So what happens? Eko havtochas akudim nikudim b'mashuos. Now mashuos sometimes says b'mashuos in plenty. Some of the Mefarshim say where you were promised lots and lots of speckled or spotted sheep. Others say b'mashuos means in darkness, in a dream. Because remember that most of the prophets dream at night. The classic tradition of prophets. And there is another one that masuos is a term for prophecy. That you dreamt in prophecy. Right?
I'm going to say that Yishai says masa.
Yeah. That's same things. And where did this come from? I'm so sorry I don't have the pasuk for you. Im ko yomar ko yuchash os. Who is going to be the one saying ko? It says if the promise to Yaakov was not what kind of sheep will be born. No. Because you can never tell what Lavan's going to say. That whatever he says, that will be the one that will be born. Im ko yomar. If you'll say it this way, it'll be that. Im ko yomar. So where's the ko this time? Where's the coherence? The ko in this, and this is the brilliance of Kalir, because this is not on the official Midrash list. This is his own addition. That ko is in the mouths of the stranger, in the mouth of the enemy. That even in dealing with Lavan, God's direction is manifest. This could be another example of that with Bilam, but we may have to leave it for the next time. And the hain, and now, oive, hain ato vikachto ir meleo teshuos. Now you have the city that was once filled with shouts of happiness, harima pamecho lemashuos, and you have just picked up. This is again borrowing from the Perek of Tehillim. You lifted up your steps to ruin. He does a play on it. So God's feet. So before this, we started with the image of the leaping sheep that were going to be Jacob's, not only his wealth, but they would also be the key to his being able to return to the land of Israel. Everything was directed. And now, instead of the leaping feet of the lambs, we have the boots. God's kiviyochel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's steps, like the boots of stormtroopers, just crushing everything. And again, leveling, the loss of direction, the loss of clarity, just a kind of a leveling of the landscape, so there are no markers anymore, nothing telling us when will it be time to go home. And that is the state that Kalir is working through. I think we're going to pause here. I'm sorry to say this, but I think I have plenty of material for next week. There's so much more I want to tell you. So we'll go. So you'll know one kina. Big deal. You'll spend the whole day Tisha B'Av going on and on and on about this one kina. But it'll be a good Tisha B'Av. All right, my dears. Thank you all so, so much for coming. Bless you.